Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Caps here. Today's show is a fun one. Evan Demerle and Ben Dowsett. Ben writes about the Jazz for Forbes. Talked at length about Dante Exum, Jeff Green, old Cavalier who just was cut by the Jazz. More about Dante Exum and about Jordan Clarkson and about that whole trade. It's a really good conversation. One of the benefits for me, and I think you, the listener, most importantly, of having Evan on board is that we can, if I'm unavailable, I was had a pre scheduled thing to go see Uncut Gems on Thursday. Evan stepped in. He was able to chat with Ben for about 25 minutes, got into that deal, got into Exum from someone who knows Dante Exum much more, and knows much more about Dante Exum than I do, or that Ben, or than anyone in the Cavs here, I think, really, really does. So you'll get a really good insight there from Ben. Check out Locked On Jazz as well. David Locke, our network founder, host of Locked On Jazz podcast, did a great job breaking down the Jazz side of the deal in like a 40-minute episode over on the Locked On Jazz feed. You can subscribe to that wherever you get Locked On Cavs or wherever you get Locked On Browns or anything else. Just a little change of plans for us is that we're going to have a weekend recap Monday, have the pre-promised KPJ Love Jetty podcast on New Year's Eve. And then we'll be back kind of normal flow, kind of planning things out the rest of the week. The Cavs do play Friday and then again on Saturday in Boston at Friday at 4 p.m. And then on Saturday against, and then excuse me, Saturday at 8 against the Wolves. This is a tough back-to-back for the Cavs. They're on that three-game winning streak, but they're going into Boston against a good Boston team. No Marcus Smart for Boston, but still a very, very good basketball team that beat Toronto on Christmas Day. No Siakam and others in that game for Toronto, but Boston's good. Jaylen Brown's having a great year. Tatum's having a pretty good year, even if some of his game isn't evolving the way you might sort of hope. And then Gordon Hayward's back. He was hurt, obviously, playing the Cavs earlier this year, but he's looked good. And he's looking more and more still like the Gordon Hayward that we're used to. And then Saturday, you got Cat. You got the revitalized-ish Andrew Wiggins, Robert Covington. You know, not a good defensive team up in Minnesota, but they have Cat, and that is going to be a challenge for the Cavs in defending one of the most unique and gifted offensive bigs in the league. So this is a very, very tough back-to-back. I'll be watching it with curiosity. We're going to talk about it here on this podcast. That's a 4 p.m. tip tomorrow, Friday, NBA TV, and then Saturday against the Wolves in Minnesota, that's an 8 p.m. tip on your normal Fox Sports Ohio broadcast, or if you're out-of-market Cavs fan or just watching, it's on NBA League Pass. But without further ado, enjoy this conversation from Ben and Evan, and we'll be back to you after the weekend. Cheers. Hope everyone had a great Christmas, either spending time with family, seeing movies, or a little bit of both. Cheers.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
What's up, everyone? This is Evan, the host of Locked On Cavs. My co-host Chris Manning is running a little late from seeing Uncut Gems. So I'm flying solo for probably the third podcast at this point. But today joining me is Ben Dowsett. He writes with me at Forbes, and he is one of the best accounts to follow online just for anything that comes to the Jazz or NBA in general. Gives me a lot of smart insight and analysis. And thanks for coming on, Ben. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Evan.
I guess just what we're doing today is Dante Exum is the new face in Cleveland. He posted up on Cavs social media today. His number is still 11 according to the team website, so there's a lot of questions about him, but that's just small stuff. And more so, since you're so in-depth and involved with the Jazz, we wanted to have you on today just to talk a little bit about Dante to help tell fans what they should expect from him, and maybe like long term, since he's a bit of an anomaly, because if you look at his stats, he hasn't done a lot for the Jazz this year, and his numbers don't jump off the page when you're just looking at box score alone. So I guess just as we'll start with a broad question and jump in real in depth on things, is what have you seen from Dante this year alone that, you know, maybe should get Cavs fans a little excited?
Well, I can't give a great answer to that for this year alone, if we're only just talking this year alone, because he's only played 83 minutes for the Jazz this year, and a lot of those have been in garbage time or in really, really short little stints here and there. Quinn Snyder clearly never quite trusted him to play him this year, I should say, as a, you know, a full-time rotation player. That's a thing that goes back a lot of years. There's some definite commentary to be had here in Utah about how the relationship with Quinn and how it appeared Quinn maybe had a shorter leash for Dante than he did for most other guys, but that's a topic for another day. That said, over the years here in Utah, and especially last year, it was a brief period. Unfortunately, that's all we really have to go off with Dante are these brief flashes of excellence. But there was a period last year. I want to say it was right around where we are now in the year, actually, if I'm not mistaken, like from maybe mid-December to mid-January or something like that, basically in between injuries. Sadly, the guy has had a lot of injuries, and that's just been really unfortunate and unlucky in a lot of cases. But he had a stretch there where he was really playing extremely solid basketball. We've seen a couple of them in playoff series, not this past year, but the year before. He was really good for the Jazz defending Harden in the Houston series. They didn't win that series, for instance. But he's got some major potential as a defender. He's really long. He's 6'6", long wingspan, great first step and speed. So he's got real potential as a wing defender who can defend potentially up to three positions in a lot of cases. He's flashed that at times. And then there have been even more brief stretches where he flashes some of that same speed and decisiveness as a ball handler. He's not much of a shooter, and frankly, his handle is pretty limited, and that's going to be one of the things the Cavs are going to have to work with him on pretty significantly. But when he can get around guys with his first step anytime he wants. And when he gets into phases where he's really confident, which, again, unfortunately have come and gone because of his health and because of how much he's played, et cetera, but he can kick it into gear and be a nice drive and kick type of guy, can finish at the rim a lot. His rim finishing numbers are actually better than you'd think throughout his career. So, yeah, you put all those things together, and there are definitely some glimmers there. It's the consistency, the confidence, and obviously the health that are the biggest issues with him.
No, I totally get that for sure. And you and I talked about this briefly, and Chris and I talked about this briefly, and actually talked about Justin Rowan with us too, and he told me a lot of the same things. But I guess my question is, do you think Utah, because it felt like for a while Utah didn't want to move on from Dante, but it feels like they just kind of had to pull the trigger at this point and move on, because you guys are kind of in a unique of, not a unique window, but you're in a window where you can contend for the playoffs, and if he's just not useful and he's just eating up your salary cap, I can understand why Utah is ready to just kind of punt him to Cleveland and see maybe what the Cavs can get with him, and then you guys get a score in Jordan Clarkson. So I guess, do you think it was just at this point because of Utah's window, that's why it made it a little easier for Utah to move on from him?
Yeah, in part, and some of it is just, it kind of all connects to the frustration of the injuries, like we've seen. Exum has some huge fans in this Jazz front office, and still does, even despite the fact that they had to move on from him. They feel like if you give them some truth serum, they would tell you that there have been multiple times where they feel like he was on the verge of kind of exploding and bringing that kind of consistency that we talked about. And then whether it's an injury, whether it's he got benched, something has happened that has thrown him out of that, and he misses a few months, and then he can't find his rhythm when he comes back, or he has to have a surgery over last offseason. We were hearing all over the summer this year that he would be in great shape to start the year and everything, and then he wasn't. He had some setbacks. He wasn't able to play at the start of the year. By the time he got back to health, Emmanuel Mudiay has been playing pretty well for the Jazz, and frankly, Exum couldn't get time over him. And at that point, I think it became clear, as you sort of said, that when you have a $9.6 million contract that's not playing in your rotation, even when he's healthy, there's only, you're a team that's trying to maximize its potential. Like you said, the Jazz think they maybe have a shot to be part of the title contenders this year with the Warriors no longer around. And yeah, I think they pretty much decided they needed some more immediate help. He does only have does only have the 2 years left this year and next year on the contract. So it's not a huge change in terms of the number of years of control they have with bringing in Clarkson, who's an expiring, but Clarkson is just likely to be a guy who can help them more off their bench, where really defense has been an issue for their bench, which is what Exum's good at, but it hasn't been anywhere near the issue that scoring has, which unfortunately Dante hasn't really been able to help them at this point, and I think Clarkson can a bit more.
No, I mean, pretty much summed it up perfectly, and it's tough as a fan of this team and somebody who's gotten to know Jordan a little bit personally. He's a fun guy to be around, and maybe some of the articles blew it a little bit out of proportion, like players fell to their knees and they were crying and grieving over Clarkson leaving town, but he's definitely a good locker room guy, and I think he will be a lot of fun for Utah, and I think he will definitely help out your guys' bench scoring.
Yeah, you've been hearing good things. I always poke around a little bit with, the folks I know and everything when the Jazz get a new player, and the Jazz have a reputation, obviously, for going after those kinds of players. Like, they want guys who are good both in the locker room and on the court in terms of what they can bring. Clarkson, clearly, I don't think this is even necessarily a bad thing. It gets talked about as a bad thing in the league sometimes, but it's a contract year for him. he seems to know it to some degree. He's made some changes to his game in terms of taking more efficient shots. He's going to the rim more often, shooting a bit more three, more often from three. Those are the kinds of things that the Jazz want to see in general, and they'll press that kind of thing. And from what I understand, they don't only necessarily view him as a rental. Like, there could be situations where they've definitely cleared some cap space up because Exum's contract is not on the books next year. Apart from re-signing Royce O'Neal, which they'll probably do with that space, they may have the option to bring Clarkson back if things work out. We'll have to see how it goes.
No, I totally understand that. I guess to stay on the topic of former Cavalier, you know, it's kind of weird. Utah and Cleveland have a bit of a connection over the last 2 years when it comes to swapping
three.
Players.
It's actually three straight years. If you go back to the Crowder deal from the year before.
I know. Isn't it? It's I feel like Cleveland and Utah's front office are on pretty good terms. So when I saw that trade, I'm like, all right, it was like Korver. And then, like you said, Crowder and then Derrick Rose for a hot second in Utah as well. But speaking of former Cavaliers, the Jazz waived Jeff Green to make roster space, and I'm looking it up right now because they signed.
Oh, sorry. Chris, are you looking? Oh, yeah. They signed Rajon Tucker out of the G League.
Yeah.
Who had been absolutely crushing it. He was one of the key name, one of the biggest names in the G League. There was lots of talk that somebody was going to grab him. In fact, I think basically several teams were in line, and the Jazz were one of the first, or maybe the first, to kind of get in with him. So, yeah, they needed that roster spot there. And there's speculation that they might not be done. They have their 15th roster spot filled by Juwan Morgan currently, but there's talk that if they were to find another move to make, that he could be an expendable roster name who they might then maybe convert him into a two-way. I'm not exactly sure what they would do, but as far as Green, just to kind of continue your line of thought there, it looked promising earlier in the year, especially during preseason. I bet you there are multiple fan bases that could say that about the Jeff Green experience. He helped them in transition a bit. He's an athlete, even in his 30s. He's a real athlete. There's no question. He helped them push the ball a bit in transition. He looked like a guy who could, you know, occasionally post up and get a bucket if the offense was dying, or could, you know, drive on somebody and get a bucket, and who could at least be a big body to fill a role defensively. He's not a stopper or anything. Yeah. And some of those things happened here and there, but frankly, the consistency was a huge problem. That's the case for multiple players on the bench. The effort level, I don't love questioning NBA players on their effort level, but it just didn't look like things were necessarily always in order there as far as the guys playing their hardest. Transition defense has been a big issue for that Jazz bench, and you certainly have to look at their wings when you worry about a concern like that. He brought good stuff in the locker room, but I do think there was possibly a disconnect as far as, you know, the kinds of shots that the Jazz wanted him to take offensively. He was a bit of a ball hog sometimes. There'd be possessions where you've got him on the court along with Bojan Bogdanović, Donovan Mitchell, and Joe Ingles, and he's posting up and taking a turnaround jumper. That's nobody needs that. Unfortunately, they weren't even able to really get. You need the, for these types of players, that, you know, your minimum salary veterans, you need the right kinds of veteran savvy, the right kinds of contributions, not just all veterans. It's not just a box that you check, like, veteran, you're good, and move on. The Jazz didn't quite get the kind of the right characteristics on the court from him, even though from all accounts he was good in the locker room.
I can attest that the same thing was with Jeff when he was in Cleveland, is everyone loved him in the locker room. And I was pretty bullish on the signing when it was announced that Jeff was signing with Utah. And I thought, like, oh, that's a great fit. Like, he's going to be great off the bench for them. So I guess just to say, like, are you surprised at all that he was waived, or did, I don't know, like, did it come as a bit of a shock as you, somebody who covers this team a lot more closely and just watches them on a game to game basis?
Not necessarily. Like, I'll say that the Jazz are very quiet about these sort of things. If there was something going on, if there was some locker room issue, or if Snyder and him weren't seeing eye to eye, we're not going to know about that. The Jazz are good at keeping that sort of thing under wraps, so I can't necessarily speak to it. I do think it's clear from the moves the Jazz have made and from the conversations I've had that they were not going to just sit around and let these bench issues that they've been having, which they, I mean, they have arguably the worst bench in the league to this point.
Yeah.
They weren't just going to sit around and make that and let that happen. Like they were, you know, they were going to do something about it at some point. I thought that the move actually, the first move might actually be something involving Ed Davis. I don't know what his trade value is around the league, but I feel like he could, not that he's a major positive asset or anything, but on a 2-year mini mid-level type of thing, I've thought that maybe they would try and move him. Frankly, I think he's actually been the biggest culprit in some of the Jazz's bench issues. He tries hard, but he just doesn't have the right fit. But then Green has been one of the major secondary issues beyond that. And between the fact that it's easier probably to find guys on the wing, and I knew that the Jazz had their eye on a couple. I didn't have the specific name, Jalen Tucker, but I knew that they had their eye on a couple of guys. With that in mind, yeah, it didn't shock me to see that. I don't think Green carried any particular trade value, and waving a player like that isn't the kind of thing that's going to do major damage to your cap sheet or anything like that. So once it came out that once we saw within like an hour or two of the Green waving news that they had a guy in mind who they were bringing in for a roster spot, it didn't really surprise me at all.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, that makes perfect sense. And I'm looking at the bench numbers now. I wrote about this the other day, but it's still hard to believe that Utah's bench is doing so bad this year. And I'm glad for you guys because I was pretty bullish on the Jazz heading into the summer. And I can tell that the bench is probably hamstringing you guys a lot in this situation and most game-to-game basis. But hopefully you guys can fix it. But just to wrap things up, now that you've kind of given everyone a taste of what the Jeff Green experience is, do you think there's a team that's out there that'll probably kick the tires on him at this point?
Yeah, I bet somebody's going to. We've seen it in the NBA. There's guys like him are always going to have some level of demand. He's 6'8". He's big. He can defend. Yeah, I'm not saying he can do it well, but he can defend your LeBron types or your Kawhi types for some possessions because he's a big enough guy to do it. He's got the athleticism. He's got a lot of years in the league, and he's respected around the league by his fellow players. I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't get a look song because he's not so old, right? Like I think he's 33. I'm looking it up right now. He's either 32 or 33. With all that playing in, yeah, he's 33. And doesn't turn 34 until the offseason. With that in mind, somebody's going to think that they can take a flyer on him. I think we've already passed the waiver period, so he's probably going to clear waivers, but I think somebody will probably take some either pseudo contender or legit contender. This is total spitballing. I have just speculating, but I could see maybe a Milwaukee could look at him for another front court guy off their bench. Who knows? You could see one of the LA teams, if they don't get Iguodala, which that's like their first option for a lot of these teams. Maybe they think that Jeff Green is a suitable, secondary prize instead, that type of a thing. I bet he lands somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when I saw that he was waived, and I kind of assumed he was just going to clear through waivers as well, because I don't think there's going to be a team and that's going to just, jump on adding Jeff Green to their roster. But I thought somebody
might, just because of the whole he's making the minimum thing. So it's not like you're putting in a waiver claim on a larger salary and somebody might be like, hey, let's just make sure we get him and nobody else does. But you're right. Like, it's the type of thing where somebody will probably figure he'll get through and they can sign him separately and not sacrifice waiver position.
I totally agree. And I just thought Milwaukee, that you say, it does make a lot of sense. I know.
I can also see Portland. Portland, even with the Melo signing, they need more front court bodies. They just need guys. Like, I could see them potentially bringing him in, especially because it's kind of like still going okay with Melo, but like, it's not fantastic. It could be better.
Exactly.
Those types of teams. I could see somebody in that range doing it.
Yeah. Now that we talk about it a little bit and you start listing some of these teams off, I think the Lakers make the most sense on paper just because, it's another body. Like you said, he can defend the LeBrons or the Kawhis. And after how last night, we're recording this the day after Christmas, and after how last night went, I feel like you need to throw another body at Kawhi other than whoever the Lakers have been trying to at this point. But no, there's definitely a market out there for him, and I'm sure he'll land on his feet, and hopefully it doesn't come back to burn you guys, because that seems to happen. From my personal experience, it seems to happen a lot with Cleveland. Whenever you let a player go, they suddenly just put it all together, and it's just an awesome feeling.
I could see with Exum, I could still see it. I absolutely could still see it. I really think the guy still has the capacity, the ceiling to be a great, or not a great NBA player, but a solid rotation NBA player. And I I still believe in him. Who knows if he's going to get there based on all the injuries and all the, frankly, just the reductions in his confidence that have happened over the years, which is, you know, that's a real thing. We have to think about that, and particularly for a guy like him. But if he's able to put it together if he makes these stretches that we've seen a couple times from him into more consistent play, he's a legit NBA player, and it's going to bring a tear to my eye when he's doing it against the Jazz someday, if it gets to that point.
Well, maybe it's... Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from. I'm just like having flashbacks to all the games. Andrew Wiggins is the biggest one, and that's who Cleveland plays on Saturday. And can't wait to have another revenge game, but hopefully it isn't at least this year for you guys. But again, thanks, Ben, for coming on with us and just talking with me for a little bit. Everyone bullied Chris on Twitter for missing out because he prioritizes watching movies over helping me out. But Ben, is there anything you want to plug before I let you go?
Not in particular, just read my writing at Forbes Sports, like you mentioned earlier. Follow me on Twitter at Ben_Dowsett. It's Dowsett. Appreciate everyone's support.
Yeah, and he actually gave me a good line, just to help you remember it. There's a fire, you douse it. So there you go. There you go. Thanks again, Ben. I hope everyone had a good holiday. And real quick, just because Justin Rowan and I were talking about this, I'm going to start using my platform now to say that everyone go out there and vote for Kevin Love to be an all-star, because he may not be in Cleveland much longer after this year. So why not enjoy it while we still can? Thanks again, Ben, and everyone, thanks for listening. I hope you all had a great holiday, and go Cavs.